You're here for another week. Thought I'd begin by asking a question. When was the last time you cried? Now, for you ladies, maybe it's been sometime in the last week or two. I don't mean that offensively. I actually mean it seriously, because for us blokes, most of us don't cry that much, do we? Not from sadness, at least. We're part of a culture that tends to hide outward displays of grief. But if you've experienced the death of someone close, you know what it's like to weep tears of grief, whether it's on the inside or the outside. But even if you haven't lost someone close, you know what it's like to experience pain and grief, don't you? Failure to succeed or perform or look like the winner that everyone says that you're supposed to look like. Maybe a breakup with the person that you thought would always be there. Or perhaps abuse from the very person who was supposed to care. In the midst of your pain, have you ever asked the question, is God really there? Does he really care? I cried every day for 2 years, 2 long years, after the death of my wife, nearly 6.5 years ago. In the midst of my pain, I asked myself that question. Does God really care? But it's not just you and your pain, or me and my pain, is it, friends? Along with the beauty and the love that we see all around us, there is so much pain, so much sadness and sickness, so much divorce and death. Countless stories of abuse and accidents happening every day. This is a broken world we live in. I don't have to work hard at convincing you of that, do I? In the midst of this broken world, does God really care? And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no more sea. I once went on a fishing trip. It was about 200 kilometres or so out to sea, out in the Barrier Reef, and on the way out, I shared a cabin with my brother. 12 hours. 12 nauseatingly long hours. Pete was throwing up every 15 minutes. Now, I haven't been in a washing machine before, but I imagine that our trip out was something like that, minus the washing powder, unfortunately, for we too were stuck in a confined space with lots of soiled sheets and clothes flying all around the place. The sea was angry that day, my friends. It was chaotic. The revelation of Jesus was recorded by his disciple John to the 7 churches around what is now modern-day Turkey. In Revelation, the sea represents chaos and evil, much like it did to my brother and I, or probably more to my brother than myself. John describes the vision that he sees in Revelation 21 as that of a new heavens and a new earth. The picture is one of total recreation, a new world. In this new world, there is no more sea. There will be no more chaos, no more evil. So that's the first thing that we learn about in this new world of John's vision. It will be a place where there is no more evil. Imagine that. No more evil. It's unimaginable, isn't it? Notice that this new world will come about in the context of the death of the old world. Verse 1. I saw a new heaven and earth, for the first heaven and earth had passed away. Here's a vital truth that we must understand. Salvation only comes in the context of judgment. This new world will only come about in the light of the old one's passing. Throughout Revelation, John has one vision after another of God's judgment on his enemies. this new world only comes about in the wake of those visions. And we learn more about this world in verse 2. John continues, I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. This picture of Jerusalem in the new heavens and earth is actually the fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy that was read earlier by Joe. Jerusalem in the Old Testament was the place of God's temple, the place where God would dwell with his people. Isaiah looked forward, as John does, to a new Jerusalem, or in other words, a new people of God. John's image is of this people being prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. So that's what John saw, a new world with no more evil, no more chaos, with a new people of God. That people of God will be dressed as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. So that's what John saw. Next, he describes what he heard. Now, even though the idea of authority in our culture is often something that people ridicule, we still know the voice of authority, don't we? Sir, put your hands where we can see them and step away from the building. We have your place surrounded. Put down the weapon and come out with your hands up. My parents could certainly speak with some authority when they wanted to. Amazing. The Apostle John hears a voice, and it's a voice not of a parent or not of earthly authority, but from the throne of God himself. Verse 3. Now is the dwelling of God with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. Listen carefully. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, or mourning, or crying, or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. Where was God in my pain? He didn't take away my pain. He didn't stop the tears. He didn't bring Karen back to me. But he has given me this promise. There will come a day when he will wipe away all my tears. On that day there will be no more sickness, suffering or sadness, no more chaos, no more car accidents that take away your spouse. God's presence will comfort his people forever. The churches John wrote to were living in an oppressive community. The promise was for their certain hope and comfort even in the face of imprisonment and death. And we see from history that God allowed suffering and persecution of his people. Yet did that mean that he wasn't there? Where's God in your pain? My guess is that he hasn't necessarily removed the pain you feel. He hasn't stopped the tears you cry. And he hasn't brought back the one you love. Perhaps he hasn't changed your immediate situation. But don't for one minute think that he is not there. Don't ever trust in that lie, that he is not there, amidst your brokenness and your pain. Listen to what God says. I am making everything new. It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. God will comfort his people forever. Know that no matter what circumstance you're going through right now, that God will comfort you. But also know from his words that God's work of recreation has already begun. God comforts now. Verse 5. I am making everything new. That's a present, continuous action of God. right now in my brokenness and in your brokenness, he's renewing us. He's renewing us. But look again. Look at verse 6. He says, "It is done." That's a completed action. So here we have two things happening. We have a present continuous action of God, of renewing, that's already completed. And I think we can best understand this if we consider the work of Jesus. And if you were here last week, you may remember that the main thing was that Jesus gives certain comfort and hope because of who he is and what he's done. Just before he died on the cross, Jesus said the words, "It is finished." And God's words here to John are an echo of Jesus' final words on the cross. It's a bit like when you pay the builder, then wait for the place to be built. Jesus paid, past tense, the ultimate price. He bought us and forgave us by his death. And by his death, he's continuing to build and make a people of God. The only way anyone could be right with God was by the death that brought forgiveness. And Jesus is one with God in continuing to be active in the world. Listen again, verse 6. "I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To him who is thirsty, I will give to drink without cost from the spring of the water of life." How is God still active? How is he still active? He gives life to those who want it. You know the reason that it won't cost you anything? Because it cost him everything. Jesus paid the high price of our forgiveness when he bore the punishment that you and I deserve. You've heard that before, haven't you? Does that just gloss over you? Jesus bore our punishment, friends. Don't ever let that gloss over you. I'm ashamed all too often how it glosses over me. But think afresh. The very Son of God, God incarnate, laid down his life for you. How can that not strike you again and again and again? And be your certain comfort now and for this amazing future of a new world that God is going to bring about. God is active in giving life to those who want it without cost because Jesus is the only one who could and did pay it. If you trust him for forgiveness, then know for sure that this amazing future of comfort by God himself awaits. Know that God is still active in renewing your life amidst the brokenness and the pain, even through the brokenness and the pain. Don't deny the present reality of God in your life now, nor the future certainty of his comfort. At this point, we need to see a tension between what is now and what is yet to come. And we must embrace it. If we don't, it will wreak havoc with our faith, if it hasn't already. Last year, when I went over to Singapore on the Moore College mission, I had to speak to a group of single parents. The man that was leading the group told me a tragic story. His wife had developed cancer, and the church that he and his wife were attending kept assuring them that God would heal her if only they had enough faith. The more they prayed, the sicker she got. Until finally she died. It must have been because he didn't have enough faith. Or so he was led to believe. Well, he could hardly keep going to church, could he? Place where he felt rejected. Place where he felt condemned and judged. If he hadn't met up with other Christians in a similar situation, chances are he might never have gone back to church. Friends, listen to what God says in verse 7. "He who overcomes will inherit all this, and I will be his God, and he will be my son." God will comfort his people. That's the free gift of life to those who want it, to those who trust in Jesus. Yet there's a broken world out there, and in here, and in here, that God's people need to overcome before they receive the home of comfort. That's what my Singapore friends' judgmental church just couldn't understand. They thought that the future comfort of God was a present reality for them, in every way, if only they had enough faith. Don't ever let anyone tell you that your pain or grief is just an illusion. That denies the very reality of God walking with us amidst our brokenness, renovating us and rebuilding us. That denies the very work of Christ, the reality of the cross, where Jesus humbled himself to death for your sake and for my sake. It was in the chaos that God himself was preparing a place for you and for me by the cross. By the cross he prepared a lasting place of peace and comfort. A place of profound comfort because God himself will comfort as the loving father to his child. We look forward with certain expectant hope because of who Jesus is and what he did. Because of that, God will comfort his people forever. But what about that question? Does God really care? At the beginning of 1999, after the accident where my wife died, I was a broken, paranoid, delusional man. I stand before you today as one who still struggles. But if I've triumphed or overcome in any way, then know this, friends. It is not because of who I am or anything that I've done or could ever do, but it's solely because of who Jesus is and what he's done. And what he continues to do. I cried out to God in my pain. I screamed out to God in my pain. He didn't take away my tears. He didn't take away my pain. And he didn't bring Karen back. But he was every bit as there. He was there in the tears. He was there in the pain. He was rebuilding me from the inside out, renovating me by his word and by his spirit. He kept reminding me of the certainty that Karen was with him in the home of comfort. Again, not because of who she was, as beautiful as she was, not because of what she'd done, as amazing a person as she was. It could never be those things. Because compared with God, she fell so far short, as we all do. It wasn't because of that, but it was solely because of who Jesus is and what he did on the cross. And she trusted that, as did my brother and my best friend who I talked about last week. And because of Jesus, God gives me certain hope of the comfort that lies ahead, the comfort that they're now experiencing, the comfort that I have in part as God is rebuilding me by his word and his spirit, that I will ultimately receive when God wipes away all my tears. Know this, God is making a people and renewing them and will comfort them forever. Did you get that? God cares. because he is going to comfort his people forever. Friends, that's nothing short of salvation. The same God who will ultimately comfort is with us now, making everything new because of Jesus' death. And these incredible promises are for all who long for the comfort of God and have turned to the only one that can give it, the Lord of heaven and earth, Jesus Christ. Do you thirst after comfort? Do you thirst? Does your heart ever ache to be comforted? Because it's so broken. Aren't there times when every fibre of your being just cries out for relief? If that in any way describes you, then how do you deal with it? Whatever you do, don't become embittered because you think God doesn't care. And don't trust the lie that says, I'm my own person. I control the future. There is a word to those who don't thirst, who refuse Jesus' offer of life. It's the flip side of salvation. If you turn over your sheets, you'll see verse 8 of this chapter. It's a sobering read. Salvation only comes in the context of judgment. But to the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those who practice magic arts, the idolaters and all liars, their place will be in the fiery lake of burning sulphur. This is the second death. Whatever you do right now, don't write this off as some caricature of hellfire and brimstone. Revelation is a picture book, and in case you didn't get it, the picture of God's judgment on his enemies is a terrible one. God cares so much that he won't let us rebel forever. He won't let self-centeredness and idolatry and immorality and rejection of him go on and on and on. That's how much he cares. The things that you do, the way you live your life, matters to him. That's how much he cares. Friends, if you don't trust Jesus, then I implore you, don't remain his enemy. Trust his death that brings forgiveness for ultimate comfort. Trust him as Lord of your life. He will comfort you forever. If you thirst after this life that Jesus gives, then I invite you to pray this following prayer in the quietness of your heart. I'll read it out. Please follow if this is your prayer. Dear God, I'm sorry that I've been trying to depend on myself. I know I can't control the future. I'm sorry for thinking I can, even in the midst of chaos and pain. Please forgive me. Thank you that Jesus died so that I can be freely forgiven and accepted by you. Please help me to trust him to give me new life. Amen.
Thanks, David.